Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
I hear voices in the night. I open my eyes. The vigil light has gone out, and it is pitch black. My father's voice rises through the floorboards. Careful not to wake Electra, I roll out of bed and tiptoe to the landing. They're arguing again. My father is angry. "Who told you to go and take on the police?" he's saying. "Are you crazy? Have you lost your mind? Because of you and your big mouth, the police dragged me out of the cafinillo and interrogated me for an hour." "It's not right," my mother responds feebly. Her voice sounds faint, as if she's been asleep. "These things, they are wrong. A policeman has no right to behave in that manner, towards a child, or anyone for that matter. They're there to uphold the law, not break it." "Wife, don't you understand? It's not a matter of right and wrong. It's simply that it is not up to you to behave like this. These things, they are beyond our power and control." My mother doesn't reply. "So we just let them beat our children," she says finally. She sounds tired, defeated. "We let them come in here and drink the blood in our veins. Is that it?" My father pushes back his chair and his long, spiky shadow leaps out of the doorway into the living room. "You really don't know when to let go, do you?" he retaliates, his voice rising again. An evening's ration of wine is gurgling in his throat. "Well, someone's got to protect your family," my mother says, changing tack. "You won't do anything." Her chair scrapes the floor. I hear her stand and walk to the washing trough. Plates and cups clatter. "You're never here when I need you. I'm always alone." She sounds weary and sorry for herself. "I'm the mother and the father for these kids. I might as well be a widow. I rely on Dimitrov for everything." He takes it on without a word. "But that much responsibility is not right for a child. He's only a kid. What does he know? It's wrong to place such a burden on him." My father exhales and says, "It'll make a man out of him." They're both sounding tired. Sleep coats their tongues. "Anyway," Baba says, "I don't want you going anywhere near the policeman again. It's not your job. And tomorrow you say you're sorry." It's getting cold. My teeth are chattering and my toes are numb. "Apologize nothing," she whirls on him. "They should apologize to us." My father's voice goes up several decibels. It's the only way he can make her pay attention. "You will obey me," he shouts, rising to his feet. "You are putting everyone in danger." My mother makes a contemptuous noise. "As if I care," she says. "Cowards." As he launches his body onto her, knocking the glass ashtray to the ground, his shadow gathers wings, like a kestrel leaping into the void. I shoot to my feet, hand over my mouth. I almost cry out at the sound of flesh pummeling flesh, grunts and cries, insults, protests. A body hits the ground. "No," she cries, "stop." I scamper, silent as smoke, to bed. The hitting goes on for a while. Behind it is the sound of my mother making coughing, choking sounds, and my father going, Eh? Are you going to listen or aren't you? Eh? I can't take this anymore, I can't." He too begins to weep. Then quiet. Not long after, the bedroom door opens, and Mama comes in. In the dark, she crawls into bed with Electra and me, crying. I swear, she mutters. In the name of God, I swear. This is the last time. My father comes upstairs and goes into the other room. As she sleeps, my mother grinds her teeth, and Electra trembles as if she is lying on icy sheets. In the morning, they're both gone. The house is empty from one end to the other. In the evening, Mama is still not back. Neither is Baba. The house is frigid. They've really done it this time. They've abandoned us. More than anything, I want to put my face in my hands and cry. Instead, I feed Byron and tie him in the backyard. Then I take Electra to Aunt Irene's. After that, I walk to the village square. Teeth clacking, feet frozen, I walk from one tavern to the other until I find my father. He's drinking with Azette. Two half-empty glasses of red wine sit between them on the grimy table. The ashtray is bristling with cigarette butts. Azette and Baba, they're almost numb with drink and vacant as the dead. I tug my father's hand and tell him to come home. My fingers rub his wedding band as if it could summon a djinn. I'd make a wish, except I don't believe it would come true. Mama is gone, I tell him. He looks at me as if his brain doesn't recognize the fruit of his loins. What? He says, managing to sound irritated and puzzled at the same time. I said I don't know where Mama is. Electra and I are scared to go to sleep on our own. Come home. I tug his hand, hoping to make him stand up. My father flicks my pesky hand away and his mouth releases a torrent of abuse, aimed at my mother and his luckless marriage. I stand still until he runs out of words. Then I take his hand again. His pupils burn in his small, red-rimmed eyes. My father and I, we walk home in the dark and snow, and I don't know why it happens, but while he is leaning his weight on me, I start to cry, really cry. Are you crying? He asks. Why are you crying? You shouldn't cry. It's not right. The tears come out of the cracks in my eyes and freeze halfway down my face. Even God doesn't want me to cry, so I stop. I take Baba home. Then I go out again to collect Electra from Aunt Irene's house. When I knock on the door, no, Irene says, she's asleep. Let her stay here tonight. I'll bring her over in the morning. At home, Baba is unconscious on a divan. The wick of the kerosene lamp is turned down low, and the flame is sputtering. A string of black smoke rises from the glass funnel and coils beneath the ceiling. I remove my father's shoes and throw a blanket over him. For a second, I fantasize about dousing him with kerosene and setting him alight. That should put an end to everything. The clock ticking loudly on the kitchen shelf brings me back to the room. Wearily, I climb the stairs and get into bed. I wake up. Beyond the curtain, the morning draws a frosty veil across the glass. The winery rooftops are covered in snow that reflects the sun in dazzling shards of light. The sky is baby blue. There is not a cloud in sight. I dress and set to doing what I like best, drawing pictures on the frosted glass with my finger. I am sketching a cottage with a smoking chimney nestled beneath a palm tree when I hear the front door open. It's Grandmother Evangelia and Aunt Vasiliki bringing my mother back. They're talking in hushed tones. One of them sets to lighting the wood stove, while another lights the hearth in the kitchen. You must forgive him, I hear Aunt Vasiliki say. Leaving is not an option. In a short while, Grandmother calls them into the kitchen. I've made tea, she says. It'll warm us up. Mama hasn't uttered a word, Now she opens her mouth. I don't want tea. I want to go upstairs and pack my things. I'm not staying in this house another hour. I open the bedroom door and stand on the landing, the better to hear. She wants to leave us. You'll do nothing of the sort, Grandmother replies. She sounds hard and uncompromising. Aunt Vasiliki is more beseeching. Think about the children, she says. You can't leave them. Besides, we'll be a laughingstock. You know how people talk. I'm ready to run downstairs and beg Mama not to abandon us. When Grandmother's voice says, Listen, Galatea, this is how things are. It hasn't been easy for any of us. Just about every woman on the island puts up with this sort of treatment. The men drink and they take it out on their wives. It's time you accepted the way things are. This is our lot to bear, and you will have to make the most of it. My mother interrupts. No, it's not right. Look at my face. Look at my throat. What have I done to deserve this? Next he will kill me and kill the children too. I'm telling you, I'm scared. She's stubborn as a mule. I'll grant that. Galatea, I sympathize. I really do, implores her sister-in-law. She's not as stony as Grandmother. Her voice is almost frightened. It's not right that he should treat you like this, the mother of his children. Leave it with me. He's my brother. I'll talk sense into him. I will stop at the winery and ask him to come and see me after work. If he hears that you want to leave him, he'll get scared and stop. He's not a bad man, it's the drink. You know as well as I do that the bottle talks louder than his conscience. That's all. I'm begging you for my sake. Don't leave him. He'll be lost without you. Mama sniffs. I can't stand to have him near me, she says softly, her voice shuddering. That's something else again, responds Vasiliki. These are private matters between you and him. All I'll say is that he is your husband, and what you are saying is wrong. The early morning sun is coming in through the sitting room window, brushing the table with a creamy lace cloth. The wood stove is crackling and roaring behind the metal door. You cannot leave him, Grandmother says, sounding like she's winding things down. I won't have you in my house if you do. My mother begins to whimper. It's as if something is broken inside of her. You have children to care for. Put your thoughts and energy into that. I've got work to do at the hotel. Vasiliki is going to stay with you for a while. I'll collect Electra for my reins, and then you will get on with your day as if nothing happened. Is that understood? Mama doesn't respond. Dimitro, Grandmother calls. Her voice is usually filled with kisses. Now it's sharp as a thorn. I know you're upstairs. Come down at once. You've got work to do. In the kitchen, I'm too scared to look at my mother. I'm afraid of two things. I don't want to see the bruises, and I don't want to see that she's hardened her heart against us. Luckily, her face is buried in a tiny, wet handkerchief. Vasiliki has her wrapped up in her wings. Your mother is not feeling well, Grandmother says, turning to me. She fell down. It's your job to look after her. I must go to work, but your aunt will get you ready for school. Vasiliki nods, looking sad and frightened. A tiny voice in my head tells me to listen to Grandmother and obey. Otherwise, Electra and I will be out on the street, frozen kittens, before nightfall. I stand by my mother. If my father goes near her with a raised hand, I swear I'll kill him. I gingerly touch one of Mama's fingers. She lifts her head and then lowers it again, sobbing harder. The fire in her gut seems to have gone out, and I'm wondering how to stoke it back to life again. As Grandmother walks out the front door, she says, It might be best if you didn't go out for a few days. You don't want people talking any more than they are already.
been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.